And I'm so sorry because I want to be right on time for you. I was phoning in before your text message, but I just couldn't get in. So I'm good now. So glad.
Paul.
I didn't want to keep us waiting. Yeah. So thank you for making time to do this. It's great.
I wanted to introduce you to Robin. Robin came to the first event that you were at with Ernie too. I've known her for a number of years. I want her to share what she's up to, but what I've known of her, she's a gifted musician, sung all over the world. She's talented healer.
Tell me a little bit about your art and what you do. So, are you, you know, playing, you know, so I know what genre of music you're in and what you're playing in.
Okay, I play all kind. I'm a multi-instrumentalist and a singer, a songwriter, and a poet. I've had a band for 20 years called Robin and Eddie with the guy from the Mamas and Papas who recently passed away, Demi Doherty. He was singing with us. And I've also been doing my own genre of music and poetry that's transformational healing music and poetry. And I play the piano and do concerts that include discussions of moving through loss, moving through grief, uplifting stuff, and I do yogic. I'm a yoga teacher for 30 years, a massage therapist for 30 years, so I've done a lot of healing, and I kind of introduce that to the audience through the music and poetry and have them do, depending on the audience, I kind of intuitively design my program based on what they need. But coming to what I like to do is...
I love that. That's a very unique show that you put together. Quite a, you know, probably way ahead of its time 20 years ago. But really, you know, in the next 10 years is the glory period for that kind of show. I mean, you're...
Yes, and Bernie, let me tell you, in 1997, I wrote my first musical, and it had a cast of 20 healers in it. It was called The Light Show. And we basically took people from the dark night of the soul into an awakening of their connection to all of life through vignettes of the chakra system. And it was me going through the dark night of my soul, the character, into this awakening of her connection. And we had original music and poetry. We had the crystal bowls playing. We did aromatherapy
What I do with that is bring it, just if you decide to use CO space, I would develop a team and bring that to Cirque du Soleil in Vegas. And we have brats that have been very big in the Cirque du Soleil management. I can't remember this girl's name out of Hollywood, but she could get it up there. But the notion would be to get the, you know, that level of performance on this in a fixed venue.
And the other thing I was thinking,
at that point you're not, although you can perform in it and be the one that, you know, they can make it around you a bit so that you get your glory moment, but in a fixed venue, make a lot of money. But as producer owner that owns it, I mean, it's just huge. Now, if you got money, where you learn to raise money, it's always the artistic, I have an artist coming to the next class, and Shannon doesn't know her. Her name is Lynn Ebola, and she was coming with her suicide stuff laid out in another room. She was going to commit suicide when she went home. She had figured this was the last thing. She couldn't get her art out, and she was taking weapons, a nose cone of an atomic weapon, guns from police, combat weapons, and melting them down and making a world peace angel. And today, her peace angel patrons, cities and municipalities, pay $35 million for a 100-foot-high peace angel. And they're all over the world. And she's just got inducted into the permanent historic exhibition for Ground Zero in New York City. And they're having the mayor and the governor, and she's presenting that win to us. And then she's made a kind of symbolic art to tribute CO Space's influence on her life by taking a version of our logo and making angel wings out of it. which she's selling a limited edition piece of. And, you know, she's, the art collectors won't realize they're buying our logo, but they're buying her, you know, basically she's made our logo her Peace Angel Wings, you know, which I think is really wonderful. And she's asked if she could earn, and come back and share her wins and return. And she's going to do that on graduation Friday at our place, Shannon. And it's going to be a big moment for you to see a 20-year journey of one artist. But she said the other day on the phone, she goes, Bernie, you are the Pope in the world today supporting artists. I mean, you take artists all the way up, and no one else is doing it. We do it everywhere. We do it in music. We do it. You know, another thing that we do, but it's always, if I can teach you, and it's, you know, not every artist can cross this bridge. We have a 3-day program, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. What we do is get you into the business of art. And you've been around enough, you know enough, that what we give out is so sensible to you now. As a young artist, it might have been a reach, but now you get that if you understand the business of art in general, you can move from making living to becoming wealthy. And the difference is seeing yourself as a brand and positioning your products properly for mass distribution and attention. And that takes money, or you don't get money. In other words, if you don't have money, they'll buy you out, they'll buy your products out, they'll give you $250,000 for the show, and Cirque du Soleil will make $100 million and you won't. And if you have money, you can joint venture with them. And so there's all sorts of things that can be done. I mean, if you did that light and sound show and had your own venue in Vegas, it would be peaked out. You'd have people coming that would just be never-ending. But what I'm saying is, let's say we want you to be celebritized. And so we write a screenplay, but you have money. We raise from 50 people, a small amount of money that love your story and the arts, and you have an ability to go to the studios and put $3.5 million down on a film production. And they're going to do the, and because you're the brand, give me your whole name.
Robin Gayle Krasny, G-A-Y-L-E Krasny, K-R-A-S-N-Y.
And when you're out in the market, what do people know you? How do they identify with you?
Robin.
I mean, just Robin.
Robin Krasny.
Robin
Krasny. Yeah, Robin Krasny. Okay, there's another issue. I was first going to brand my story. I have a children's story. I have a couple of children's stories, but one of them is called Raider Jane and the Raiders of the Lost Art, and the Lost Art being a psychic gift that kids are born with that are, they're talked out of by the time they're 6, 7 years old. And Raider Jane is kind of a Joan of Arc to the kids. That's my brand, and I'm going to brand under Robin Krasny. I want to create the Robin Krasny brand, but have the branches off of the stories and things like that.
Well, I think that the problem we have is Krasny, like so many names in art and theater and acting and so forth, is tough. It doesn't convey emotion. And I'll give you an example. I mean, you know, Madonna's Madonna, you know.
Yeah.
So when we look at you, you know, I want to get you to be some name that becomes a brand. I'm giving an example would be like Robin Illuminate. And you're Robin Illuminate, and all your products are another. And so you're the author of the new Harry Potter series. And it's Raiders of the Lost Ark. And we trademark that and get that out. And that becomes a screenplay for a motion picture that's driven by a children's book series. And
right. I've already thought about this, Bernie.
Well, I know, but it just takes money. In other words, publishers don't make your book work. you have mm-hmm. to spend a lot of money and promote it. Publishers are printers who are
right.
for taking most of your money, printing the book, and delivering the book to stores. But they don't promote you and get your brand up. So truly, with money, you can keep all the profits and build your own publishing company. And I mean, that's almost the way to do it. But you can, you know, with Harry Potter having no more stories.
Yes.
That publisher needs another Harry Potter. And
mm-hmm.
they know how to transfer that audience that they have, which is a billion, over to the new product. So dealing with that publisher makes sense. But again, if you have money and tell them you're going to spend a lot of money on public relations, advertising, you're going to put up billboards around at the launch, and parents are going to know this is out there, and you'll be on talk shows, etc. Your own money, your own publicist is getting those shows. The publisher, when they see that marketing campaign and the money you're going to spend, you just become the short stack that they're going to contract with. And then you've got a partnership that can really work, because they don't want a book. They want a series. And so mm-hmm. if you start the series with the first stories, and have the screenplay ready to go, and have a treatment for the television show. So it's integrated. So there's the, you know, Harry Potter never had a television show, but he should have.
He should have, yeah.
That would have kept the box office going. But and you do the same model of release phenomenon and getting all that done. And then the big one, ultimately, is to take Robin Illuminate and have her own shows, just like you did the Warriors of Light type thing, where you've got, in fact, your buddy who just died, one of his dear friends, wrote Fly Like an Eagle with the Steve Miller Band. He's a friend mm-hmm. of mine. And he has a song called Warriors of Light, which is just amazing for this, you know, is another item for the show you've made. But the big item that I'm seeing is, after you're established, is coming out with the movie Robin. And it, you know, tracks you as this little baby girl, goes through school, does her musical stuff, and then all of a sudden is all over the world and putting on these unique shows. And people mm-hmm. telling you, you shouldn't do it, can't do it, it's not going to go. And you say, I'm staying with my heart, I'm following my soul, I'll never get out of being true. And how you read the audience, and then people like lead singers from the Mamas and Papas are so moved, they come with you and sing with you for life till they go. You're at that funeral. Then you're going forward and making your movies, your book series. The world already knows Raiders of Lost Ark, and they're seeing this is the person that did it. Then you can imagine that the story or the movie of the person that made Harry Potter, we'd all go to see that. That they don't have it, and she's not doing it, and she's losing $1 billion by not doing it. But in her case, the only thing she has left is more books and more stories. You have endless shows. You could have 5 Vegas shows. You could have, the new Jesus Christ Superstar. So many shows that you can create to wake us up to inner light and have those out there in the market starving for that kind of art. And so,
right.
You can, you're at the point where you can leverage your creative gift as Mozart performer. You're going to meet at our place Hugh Ballou, and I want you to audition for him. And I've got a guy that I'll ask to come in on the weekend, and remind me, Shannon, because he won't come in if I don't write him. His name is Bova, B-O-V-A, and he's one of the 3 producers for the biggest talent in the world. So he's a producer who's produced a third or more of the biggest hits for Celine Dion and many others. And he's in the group.
What's
and
his name?
All, Bova.
What's his
B-O-V-A. Bova.
Okay.
And but there is many others that we have at A-Game. We have lots of movies going on. And if we can get you 45 seconds in a movie, it's worth more than all your 20 years on the road.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm a film and television actress already, and I've done everything from makeup, hair, on camera, off camera, script supervising.
You're going to meet people that are doing movies like the life story of the guy that formed the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to meet people who are made. Well, the biggest movie is five movies on Elvis Presley's life.
Mm-hmm.
Called Growing Up Graceland. And there's some scenes in there that jerk your heart out of your body. And they don't have right now the Titanic song that the heart will go on. And you could tell David Stanley, who's the producer, and that's, you can look up online Growing Up Graceland for the trailer. And then you can see you'll get Impello, Impello, and he has quite a few films going. I have one guy coming in that if you're there, I'll try to get you to him, but he is going to be in to meet a guy to talk about a new option for funding, to fund $1 billion of his films. He does 15 theatrical box office films a year and 3 television new series a year. He's a major production house in Hollywood. His name is Phil Goldfein. But there's G-O-L-D. I can't remember if it's F-I-N-G or F-L-I-N-G. But he's the Academy Award winner and major talent in Hollywood.
Okay.
Burnett Bain is on his faculty. He comes and teaches rotationally. He did Robin Williams' last film, What Dreams May Come.
What Dreams May Come. Now, is it Jane Seymour? She was involved in that somehow.
Yeah.
And the guy handled Lano. Yeah.
That was Burnett's film. And we work at the producer level, we're able to do that. It's like we help artists like a roller board leverage in and leverage up their business. But here's the thing you have to know. The business skills you have today have taken a artistic lady leader and created income. And the lifestyle of that income has been a sacrifice.
That's the starving artist. I'm done with that.
Well, I know. I'm just saying that you know that, that part. Now, the skills to get you leverage so that you are able to develop wealth, not just cash flow, and have a much different lifestyle and cash flow, those are skills you have to acquire. The skills that got you here are not the skills that will get you to there. So you have to get those skills. Now, at your time of life, the odds mathematically are you'll never get them. That's what would normally happen. If you come to our place, you'll have them in a week. And it's not like when you get those skills, it's not like they're subtle. It's like you know, there's a part of humans where I call it you know. It's not that you know, it's that you know. And you will know you know, and you will have it. So we will map out a career plan. But the key is money. In arts, you will never make the big money. Even the artists that have the biggest contracts and are the superstars have actually, over their career, got bell curve income. In other words, they live off their investments from the few peak years they actually had. And one of the reasons, and if you say, who are the great artists that actually get by that? And it's people like Ned Beatty and Henry Winkler and these older stars, because they took their millions and became producers who had money and now invested their money in properties they produced. And the result of their investments created huge money and abilities to do it again and again. And they were now in the wealth side of the business, but it was because they developed capital and they knew how to do it. Now, Phil Goldstein is making hundreds of millions a year. I mean, he's doing big jobs, but he can't grow his business without capital and finding a new, better way to get capital. He chooses us. He's coming to us. He'd be there all week, except he has to go to a film shoot in Europe. It's, so he's going right from us to Yugoslavia for the film shoot on Monday morning or Sunday. And so what I'm trying to do is suggest that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the last Friday of this month, Saturday and Sunday, or whenever you decide to come, but the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is when we do the capital class. And I need you to be a master student to fund your production company. Now, it gets very pleasant. There's a part of this you're not aware of, which is when you get raising money and you're going to spend 9 months of your life raising money instead of playing, as you usually do, you're going to start making $15,000 a month from the money. You don't have to travel. You're not in hotels. And you're raising money from people you met at CO Space, and you're doing it legally and properly, and you're not afraid of it. It's just like learning to play some chords on the guitar. So if you worked with me for a week, would I be able to play Itsy Bitsy Spider? Probably. I would say pretty damn well. And you would have me playing Itsy Bitsy Spider on a guitar or a piano or whatever. And you could do that yourself. You could get me to do that. And I would know that. And I could do that in a week by rehearsing. Well, in a week, I can get you to raise $12 million. I can show you how to do it and do it. That would fund a fixed venue performance in Vegas with Cirque du Soleil, a Broadway show, if you want, in Broadway. And I have a man who produces Broadway plays. His name is Norman Twain, Norman Twain Productions. If you walk in and say, I want to hire you to produce the program and get it on Broadway, he'll do all of it. And he'll produce you, direct you, and make it be. He's done movies like Lean on Me all the way up to Spinning Butter with Sarah Jessica Parker. And he's now doing multiple Broadway plays. He's done Broadway plays for years, but he's doing that now. And it's always just the money. And it's not that much money. And you would also be able to make your book, that is your children book series. And and I'm thinking of Raiders of the Lost Ark might be a Harry Potter's-like book. Instead of going to younger children as a children's book, we could make this a book for artists that are starting to read, from 9 years old to 15 years old, and they don't like reading, so we have to give them something like Harry Potter to get them to want to read. And Raiders of the Lost Ark would be terrific. Every art teacher in the United States would make it required reading for their kids.
Well, Raiders of the Lost Ark are our psychic gifts, our abilities that we have naturally grown up. I have a team of kids. One has the ability to read.
Well, that's even better. That's more like a Harry Potter. But,
yeah, it's like an X-Men.
What you'll do is you'll have the forces of darkness try to, kids will start using it for the dark side. And you won't copy George Lucas's trademark, but basically you'll teach the kids how to be on your version of the right side of the force.
Yeah, and they have to work together as a team in order to conquer some of these things. They can't do it alone.
Perfect. That's perfect. Right. I mean, it's so good. And, I mean, that's what the parents will love. Everybody will love that. That'll be a smash hit. And then you come out with that, and that becomes a movie. And the movie becomes with these, you know, it's just like the mutants and all their gifted powers. But instead of flame on, we have different kinds of, we have prophecy. We have ability to tell the future. We can tell they're coming and get out. And we can do things that are not violent, but prevent us from having danger. Yeah, shield us, put bubbles around us, and they can't see us. And they walk right by the apartment, and so forth.
There's all the stuff that's in there, and Raider Jane is my character, or me, that is the woman who gets these orphans/kids, kind of, that come to her out of the blue. She's having
psychic crises of her own because she let go of a lot of her gifts because of trauma in her life.
Well,
and
the damn thing is the Harry Potter. I mean, you've written of Harry Potter, honey. That's just what the market wants right now. And so what we do is we take that and, what about the characters as far as illustrations? Has that been done yet?
No, actually, on another children's story I have going right now, which is a spiritual doctor.
Do you have illustrators that you want to use for that?
I have one that I'm working with right now. She's popping up as we speak. Some illustrations for that one, but not for the Raiders one yet. But for everyone's
dream. I have one that you can interview. She's not doing it. She's a mom with a bunch of kids.
Uh-huh.
But her artwork has stunned the world. She's in her. I don't know if this time goes by. I'm saying late 20s, probably, maybe early 30s. But she's her name is Jessica Ridd, R-I-D-D, and she's out of Utah. And you can get Jessica Ridd's phone number from the database from, I have it. I'll get it for you. But Jessica Ridd is, I mean, I'm just saying you could talk and have a look at some of her work. But when she understands what you're doing and does the characters in the spiritual space, it just takes your breath away. It just takes your breath away. You just gasp. She will interpret what you want to do. And you can do it with a buyout for her and pay her by the image and own them. But those images are what are going to make the big bucks because you've got to remember something. When you sell a box office like the Tolkien trilogy and you do $1 billion at the box office, that's divided all sorts of ways. And it's amazing how, you know, little of that is actually back in the person that wrote it all's hands, but they're wealthy. But the money of the residual contract on the merchandise, that sells $10 billion.
Right. And so you want to keep the merchandising.
Well, that's right, because you can't. When you do a joint venture with the studio,
right.
So you don't want to produce this as an independent producer because the money it takes to do it is, you know, there's a 97% failure of any indie production. And the reason is, there's two parts. It's always the business again. The box offices, say there's 2,400 box offices and we want to get a contract for all of them. The box offices are monopolized by distribution sources. And if you're not in the studio system, you can't get those kind of box office plays. When we did Pretty Woman and things like that, we had 10 weeks in box office. Today, you spend the same 10 years ramping one of those up, and you get 10 days in the box office, not 10 weeks. And in the 10 days, you have to focus your audience. So to get them, the average, now this is a horror movie that costs $2 million to make, and this is Avatar that costs $200 million to make. So just think of the spectrum. The average P&A, that means the advertising and promotion, to get the audience to know the film exists is $34 million. It's generally double the average film budget.
Wow.
So the problem is that when you make a quality film, like your film is special effects and lots of green screen and requires the bleeding edge of technology so that you don't make a C-level film, your first film has to be like Toy Story. It has to be so good they fall into this world.
Yeah.
And so that film is going to cost $60 to $100 million to make. And how it happens is in that kind of film, ideally, you would put $5 million down and the studio would put $5 million. That's 10. Then they'd go to Bank of America and get a bond that gave an insurance policy that the film would be finished by a certain date, and if it wasn't, they would pay $100 million. And so, based on that, the Bank of America, with that insurance, can now lend the $100 million based on 10 million down, and the fact that on first revenue coming in, all of it will be used to pay off the bank loan. So that film is now going to market, and you guys are joint venture partners. Now the studio has a bigger investment than you do, because it's not just their cash. They're going to have their machine, their publicity, their brand name produced by Paramount. They're going to have their producers and directors. They're going to insist they have their own producer, their own director, because you don't know how to produce a big budget film. You don't know how to assemble the catering trucks and the lighting.
Actually, I was production coordinator on the last film. I pretty much do know how to do all that stuff.
Well, they aren't going to trust you with an $80 million budget.
No, and I don't actually want to do it, thankfully.
Yeah, well, I know, but I'm going to tell you what you will do. You will be the co-director on screen, an executive producer. You will be sitting there as the, you know, equally in charge, like two Caesars running the production set. You'll have that authority in the pre-production, the principal on camera production, and more importantly, you'll have veto power, and that's the big contract item you want, so that you have to be finally approving every post-edit cut. Then it's
right.
The way you want it, and you know it's the way you want it, and they want it to be, they want to make sure they make a film that doesn't lose its pacing and has the eye candy velocity that will keep and hold the audience, and they want to be faithful to your story because you wrote it, and they want that author's input, but they do a lot of things where they want to add value, and, you know, to get a buy-in of a creative team, everybody has to have their juice on it to a bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to the screenplay, I'll bring you Sharon Espinosa of Springboard Production. She's the best final script whacker and continuity whacker. And she's also on set, if you bring her in and make her part of the contract, harmonizer. She's done more of it than anybody. And she can tell A-level stars to shut the fuck up and get
nice.
It back on. Yeah, she just, everybody looks at her as the goddess when she's on. She's just done more credits and more than anybody alive. And she just, you know, she keeps the production humming. And she doesn't
right.
let it get off track from the ego, so... You don't even have her on set generally, but when they get stuck and the thing's not rolling, it's going over budget, they bring her in at 50 grand a day to get it back on track, and she'll do that in 3 to 4 days.
She'll
get script modification, she'll get everybody's buy-in, she'll get them all team working again, and then the thing goes to finish. But if she looks at the script with just you and her, she will upgrade the script before you go to studio to such a level you can't imagine. You'll be studio level ready and ready to go.
Right.
And she's a big credit to put on there, you know, a screen reviewed by Sharon Espinosa's Springboard. Well, we got her. I mean, she's an older woman. She's a cancer survivor. And she just loves helping artists. She's been helping artists forever. And she knows that you get more stories from her than you'll get from almost anybody in the industry. I mean, she came up with the old guys and knows all the new guys. So she's
right.
just grandma in the industry. I mean, when I was last with her in a limo coming from Sony on a major production, she turned around, and she's leaving. The head of Sony had flown in from Japan, the Japanese guy, and he's going, "You not leave now. You stay now. We paid you stay." She goes, "You know, pay me for nothing. You're all back on track. You don't need me." She goes, "I go CO space." He goes, "What's CO space?" He goes, "It where I go." And she's walking out, throwing the chalk over her shoulder. And the guy's shaking his head because she's turning down $50,000 a day. And she gets in the car, and I'm waiting to hear what she's going to say. And I'm on one side of the couch, and she's on the other in the limo. And we're pouring sparkling water, and she's got her sparkling water and a champagne glass. We don't drink, really. And she's holding it, and she goes, she toasts to me, and she goes, "We're 41 years trying to get out of this fucking industry, and they won't let us out. Can you believe us? We're just mummies, and they won't let us go." And I laughed. I thought that's because I've been trying to get out of this industry, and I've given up. I can't get out because you just know too many people, and you begin to help them. And finally, I've got this that is going to be big for you. Once you get the money, start it. I mean, you get four or five investors, get half a million in the bank. You're making $15,000 a month. Your gas is paid for. Your car payment. It's like $20,000 a month for 2 years. And now you're just raising money. And we raised the amount I said, which was, I'm an investment banker economist, and I'm a particularly efficient structuralist in the entertainment industry. With $12 million, you're going to build a big, big business. You're going to be so successful. And that's your next step. But
I'm sorry, I did not mean to interrupt you. My friend Chuck Clementi is here with me, and he was the CEO of COO of AOL at the time when the stock split 7 times, and he's one of my advisors. And he's here with me.
I'm so glad. So you worked before or after the Case years?
Steve Case and I worked in the beginning, and then I left before the merger with Time Warner.
Yeah, well, I was head of a company called Invest America, and it was in the 70s and 80s, and it was about 6,000 stockbrokers, publicly traded, 14 countries, and we were basically a kind of Drexel-like underwriting boutique house. So we would be in syndicates of IPOs coming out. We did the cable industry, the fiber industry, satellite industry, lots of real estate. And we did a lot of public launches, and we were in the syndicates with Merle Morgan, etc. And when my dad got cancer, I sold it to a consolidator in Chicago. He took it private and sold it to A.G. Edwards, sold our firm, three other firms, and his firm, United States Capital, merged it to A.G. Edwards, and then they used that to sweeten their merger when they merged. And so it was one of those things. But I was certainly, you know, I was tutored and mentored by the guys that made your markets, like John Orff, the chairman of Smith Barney, and all these unmerged, you know, and Shearson was unmerged. And I worked direct with the chairman. And so I spent most of my life in the Twin Towers for the first 20-some years.
I'm familiar with your company. I dealt with a lot of them. When we were ready to go public, there was a company called Redgate. When Steve Case, I was talking with his brother, who was the president of Hamburger Chris, and he suggested we talk with Steve, and immediately Steve and us merged.
Just on the small world basis. Hamburg and Quist, as you know, is the premier architect of Silicon Valley's public offerings, and everybody flows through them. Apple, everybody. And my uncle Bruce was the founder, co-founder of Hamburg and Quist, and was on its board till he retired. Our family is an old San Franciscan family. The Macy building used to be the Dorman building until 1974. It was the largest hotel outfitter in the world. It's owned by Holiday Inn now, its innkeeper Dorman, and it's still the largest hotel and resort outfitter in the world. So we all grew up in that, and Bruce at Hamburg and Quist, what happened is George Witter, I was going to school majoring in economics at Berkeley, and I got in the underwriting group of Dean Witter when it was a family-owned firm. And George, who I went to school with, said I was gifted at this, and if I'd start a brokerage firm, he'd give me the crumbs, and I'd build a major broker-dealer. And I thought that was a pretty good offer, so I started up and made my, you know, grew a lot faster than I thought it was going to grow, and we really grew. And then behind it, my uncle at Hamburg and Quist was, you know, when the underwritings would come up, he'd make sure I was in the syndicate so I could play a role up in my capital. And that was fun because I got to be in those. I remember flying back on the plane with Bruce from Hamburg and Quist, Melvin Belli. You remember Melvin? But they're structuring the Apple deal. The bell's going to ring when we're going down, and they're reframing the stock valuation. And I'm inside that meeting in the first class of the plane going back, and it was like, I look back at that and think that's one of, you know, I was thinking, I learned more in that airplane flight than 6 years at Berkeley. It was just such a tutorage to be privileged to be on the inside of those roll-ups. So, but I appreciate what you guys have done, and of course you rewrote the landscape with the Time Warner, you know, life that you went through. And we were the second most influential group on the Jobs Act of 2012 that, you know, Stephen was behind the president when that was signed, lobbying for getting this new legislation on raising capital out. And we're the only firm that teaches the new law. Let me give you an example of what we're doing. It's interesting because you're going to appreciate this. What I'm going to have her do is I think that if we do, with our resources, because we really are unique, and if Shannon, because of his sophistication, he needs to see films by Ed Bogle. And and I think Michael Drew. And Michael Drew is important here because he has done 100 New York Times best-selling books in a row, but always with us, with our push. We've broken the Guinness Book of Records 6 times. We created, launched, and did Chicken Soup for the Soul. And we helped them sell it to a private equity firm for $68 million. We invented, did, and ramped up Rich Dad Poor Dad, and they sold for $40 million. And these are, you know, never happened in publishing brands before like that.
Bernie, you're saying a lot of great things. One of the things that I'm talking to Robin and have her understand is we're talking about getting financing, a lot of investments. Typically, in the investment groupings that you do, what would Robin have to give up for the kinds of investments
you're talking about? As chairman of a public underwriting firm, you're not going to get higher level advice than, you know, because attorneys don't know valuation, how to structure these things. They really don't. And they follow template formats. They tend to put her in a group. If they're doing an oil and gas, that's what they do. We're going to use a firm. I want to describe it before I give you the model. We're going to use Locke Lords of Washington, D.C. The head of that firm, the managing partner, is the former lead Security and Exchange Commission commissioner. 4 of the commissioners on the SEC were appointed by him. He's also, that's 2 terms under Bush. His name, when you look it up, is Raoul, his big resume, Roelcampos. This is the largest law firm in private equity, hedge funds, investment banks, and banks worldwide. They represent Credit Suisse, BlackRock, Carlyle. They represent not all of their business, but some of them. And they're just the largest footprint. They're number one in the financial sector. So they're particularly useful for her because they have huge entertainment arms both in Hollywood and in New York and in London and, you know, in Beijing and all over the world. So they're particularly good. The man that she'll meet if she comes to class is the senior security law partner for the whole firm, out of Washington, D.C. headquarters, and his name is Marlon, M-A-R-L-O-N, Paz, P-A-Z. And when the financial system of the world was saved, the people that paraded into the rooms at Bear Stearns, at the bailout for AIG, at the TARP, where they were forcing the banks to take all the government money, the parade was Paulson from the cabinet, Geithner from the U.S. Treasury, Bernanke for the Federal Reserve Board, and Marlon Paz, who is Deputy Director of the Securities and Exchange Commission under Mary Shapiro. So he was the one that ran the SEC. That's the high slot, over 100 silos, administratively. And he left to become the senior law partner under his mentor, who went through the crash with them, that he worked with, who was the lead of the commissioners during the crash years. And those men saved the financial system of the world. And they're the brightest financial minds on the block, and they have more favors, though, than anybody out there. And they know everybody in the private equity and hedge fund world. So what I'm looking at is they will do an offering that they normally would charge $70,000 for to do a $12 million private placement. They will charge $15,000 and rush it. And we're going to use, in the way we do it, the new law, which no one knows about, and I'll explain it to you, called Regulation A. And Regulation A is particularly easy for her to sell because she can sell under Regulation A publicly, crowdfunding, and she can sell to unlimited non-accredited investors. Now, in our world, everybody's going to be accredited, so she won't meet anybody at our place that isn't accredited. And there's a film, I'm going to have you look at just three films. I'm going to have her look at Sharon Lecter, and she's got 5 million women in her database that will buy this book for their kids. She's the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. She's the author of Outwitting the Devil, and she's the author of Think and Grow Rich for Women. And she has a database of the wealthiest women around. She was the first woman senior partner auditor at Doolittle. She's a CPA. She's solid as a rock, and you're going to appreciate her film. Her film will tell you our processes and what we do.
We watched one of them that Shannon sent us a link to.
But it might be the wrong one for your business. We have 120.
It just looked like a bunch of people saying how much money they grossed. That didn't show me anything besides the success stories, which
all right.
is great. And
well, okay.
But,
well, that film is called Show Me the Money, and its only purpose is to let you watch 3 to 5 minutes, not all of it, to see that there are real check writers who actually write checks for a wide variety of business while the conference is going on. And it's telling you an important fact, that we do about $3 billion a year in funding in 5 meetings. And your partner there will tell you that outside Wall Street, nobody raises more money for small business than we do at those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the biggest source of getting this funding done. But let me give you, and we're the only one that has a money-back guarantee. So, you know, it's a little different than other places. So let me give you a model. So draw a big circle on a piece of paper.
Got it.
And what I want to do is create Robin Productions International. And Robin Productions is going to produce all of these properties. And the way we're going to do it is joint venture partnerships with the folks, and we're going to have control over the product because we're financial partners in each of the deals. And you've got the talent right here in the call to negotiate these contracts in the entertainment industry with our accessing the market, so you have the market and at a high level. And then we just pull in and put the deals together, and they'll be good, solid deals. Now, your standing, once you have a balance sheet, is going to be really quite substantial. And I'm looking at if she's not, if you're going to be involved in this and you're going to be involved in a significant way, I would like to see her bounce this into a first round, a pre-public round, and then a public round, where she actually was able to become a significant production house herself, given her eclectic properties. I mean, she has a lot of merchandise that can be sold out of these properties once they become mainstream. So I'm looking at the following structure financially. So I want to put together a 20 million share. Are you living in California is where you live?
No, I'm living where Shannon lives, in Florida.
Okay, well, in Florida, we create a 20 million unit, so put at the top of the circle, 20 million unit LLC. And the reason we'd use an LLC, even though we want to end up going public, is if in the early years of this we start making a lot of money, we have a state tax on income for a C-Corp in Florida. We have no tax on an LLC, so we have zero state tax. We also have on an LLC no property tax, no B&O tax for inventory of merchandise in the warehouse. So I don't want to get those two taxes going any earlier than we have to, and we probably will set up those components of the business in tax-free venues. But let's say it's a 20 million unit LLC, as an entertainment company, and at the bottom of the circle put 20% in there. And at the bottom of that put 4 million shares, which is 20% of 20 million at issue. And those 4 million shares put 400 blocks of stock at $30,000 a block at a strike price as you are coming out where you've raised your $12 million. And,
okay, you just 400 again, 400 blocks of stock at 30,000 each, or what did you say?
Yes, 30,000 each.
Okay.
And that'll raise 12 million. And I'm saying most people will put in 150 or more, so you're looking at maybe 50 to 60 people. And under a Reg A, you can literally, when you're performing, you could say, investment opportunity in my production company, come and see me if you want to get in at a favored price. And what I'm looking at, if you're both doing the circle, put a dotted line around the outside. And what I would do is, after you get the offering and you raise the money through our group, and that'll take some months, you know, of, if you do it with us, where every 60 days you get a new group of investors, then you follow up and qualify their relationships and their amounts, and then you get them in, and then about the time you're running out, you have another one. We just keep doing it till we raise it all. And it's a pretty pleasant process, much more friendly investors. If you use your circles and use outside people, you can raise it pretty rapidly. And once we get it raised, then I would pay Lock and Lord about 150 grand to do a pitch book for 50 million. And that would go to private equity. And that would be to begin to produce multiple projects simultaneously and also bring the merchandise into market underneath these projects. And so that will have a store carrying cost once we go to retail with some of these items that are now well identified in the market and they want to purchase the merchandise. We will have stores not pay us for 72 days. And we have millions of dollars of flooring costs that we have to bear while we're getting the profits out of the turnover. And later I can bring you some legitimate flooring companies that are factors at a, you know, 12% rate rather than a vulture factor. And the one we use is United Capital out of Tampa, by the way. They're in Florida. But we have to have a balance sheet, and we have to have some track record in the stores, and then they will take it over and give us expansion capital so we can go to all the stores. But that triggers your production, your household wordism, and it triggers your capacity to have your merchandise begin to really roll the big EBITDA in for the public side of it. And then I would go public to globalize it so that the products are distributed well in all countries, and you're magnifying it. You hire chief operating officers. You put a president chief operating officer, but you stay as chairwoman CEO. You never give that CEO title up because the job that needs to be done can be done by well-paid talent that we hire that will execute those functions to high quality while you maintain control. And if the dotted line outside the circle is a preferred pre-public stock that is now converting the company to a C-Corp, and it's a preferred stock, and that preference is done by Raul, who's just a genius and structuralist. I mean, he's who Jamie Dimon goes to. So he will structure a brilliant preference lineup that will attract the private equity, and they know they have a public firm right behind it with Lock Lord pushing the IPO. And Lock Lord, when they do the IPO, they get firm underwriting. They do all that. They get a really great job for the company as long as they're showing a growth.
Let me break in for a second. I understand. That's all great, and I think that's where things can go. What I'm talking to Robin about a lot is she's at the ground floor starting an individual with great ideas, great talent, but she doesn't have the resources, financial resources to start with, and she needs to get the initial funding. What typically do you find?
Well, let me give you a journey. Okay. Here's a guy who's an engineer, and I'm telling you his story because you're going to want to meet him. And he's out of the Carolinas, and he's worked in virtual reality for a long time. And he's put all his money from his salary job as an engineer into his developing his IT, getting patents on it, working on the engineering, and so forth. And he's basically developed modeling for a virtual reality where you could be at a conference around a table and have the most realistic experience. But he has a set of algorithms that convey a sense to you when you put your hand out and shake my hand, I feel it. And so he has touch that goes with it. So that's, I mean, just taking that, like the head trainer for Cisco's at our place. So the trainers at our place train about 82% of the board chairman of the Fortune Group. So our access to the C-suite is pretty first bounce. And so when he brings that to Cisco, who dominates the conference space, that contract and license is going to be big. Now, it gives them another 50 years of dominance in the conference space and assures their shareholder EBITDA. Now, he's in her position, so he doesn't have the money to come to us, and he doesn't know you. So he doesn't have someone that would put it on a credit card and get him into our place. So he does a program we have called Fund Busting, and he learns how to get enough money to get to our space. And he gets the money. I wanted him to keep doing it so he'd get more money, but he got just enough to get there with the airfare, et cetera. I mean, when he came to our place, he didn't have $200 of liquidity. So he's going through our class, and he finds out he needs $15,000, which is a reduced fee to pay for the offering document. But he doesn't have the money for the offering document. And so we, during the program he's going through, taught him how to get bridge loans to back the launch of the offering. So in the next 72 hours, he raises $250,000. Or no, the other guy, he raised $75,000. He raised $75,000 before he left the building. Then he went home with a very wealthy you that he met there. And now that guy has done a contract with him, and he's going to fund the whole thing, which is real smart for him. So now he doesn't need the offering because this guy's going to underwrite all those costs and take him up. And that guy's going to make a fortune. And so that happens at our space. Another guy has two coffee piano bars where you do dueling piano bars in San Diego. A good business. And he came, went through the capital class, and he went to get some bridge money to do the offering and some other things he wanted to do. And he raised $200,000 in the time he was at our place. And he got a license to fund additional piano bars in his area. And then when he left class, he was having discussions with a very wealthy guy met there. And that guy is now committed under a contract to underwrite all of his California expansion. So he now has a whole different play, but he's going ahead with the offering because he wants to take these global and he wants to be public to do it. And he's going to move through the chain of events to make that happen. And he's becoming a hell of a businessman. He's learned a lot and become a hell of a businessman. So we give a Wharton-level training to her. She's not the same business person. We're not a 30% tune-up on her business skills. We're a 300% download. We're the place the head of Nokia came, and we're the ones that did the strategy to merge into Microsoft. And we do this for the largest companies. We do it for the midsize, and we do it for the ramp-ups. I personally like working with her because I see her as a Harry Potter franchise and a, you know, multi-country Cirque du Soleil performance for the soul, where the first performance is audience interactive for spiritual awakening and wellness, and you walk out of there with your family, feel like you're shot out of a cannon. And we don't have that today. And we need that new, you know, not to go to Jesus Christ Superstar, was kind of breaking a mold for all the taboos. But I think that today we need that spiritual, artistic revival that she's got the products and IP for. And I think that's a huge franchise. And I look at that. I want to dive deeper into the show when I get her on site with us. But I think a joint venture with Norman Twain to do a Broadway play with that. Gives her a cat-like environment that, you know, drops to a musical movie and becomes a product by itself as a standalone item. Now, the final thing I was going to say is when you have a balance sheet, I don't want to bring you in the door right at the moment, but Kathy Lee Crosby, and you can look her up, but she's quick history. She was the first woman to win four Wimbledon championships, which stood for years. She was the movie star that went on all the Bob Hope tours all over the world until Bob stopped. She is a host of movies with awards. She's probably best known in today's generation as the original Wonder Woman. And she is, you know, an A-level star. She's invested in films she's produced. And she has worked for a number of years. She came to us to get the financial side. She's going to one of the biggest private equity firms that has given her a letter of interest for full funding in New York and is now going to get that backing. And they are underwriting a studio called Kathy Lee Crosby Studios. And she wants to put out what she calls spiritual Hollywood. And she wants to produce these kind of properties you're doing. And she also wants to have ethical and integritous pay for the writers and artists, and they have fair stakes in the film, and rewrite the model so that everybody's making money and the entity is doing a good job as a public entity and trust for artistic development. She wants to help artists develop, but she wants really to make great films that are going to be spiritually cohesive at family value levels, and she feels that niche is not addressed, and she wants to do it. And everybody